Morning, brothers and sisters. I'd like to give a quick thanks to anyone and everyone who helped me with this talk. As I'm sure you've heard multiple times this weekend, the word Deuteronomy means second law or repetition of the law. In Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, laws had been publicized at intervals. However, once they entered the land, all the generations who had received the laws will all have died, aside from Caleb and Joshua. Now, in their wanderings, just before entering Canaan, these laws were rehearsed and expounded in anticipation of settled life. Leading up to Deuteronomy 28, there were two sermons given by Moses. In the first, Moses went over a review of Israel's history. In the second, he reviewed the law and the application of the law. In Deuteronomy 27, as recently covered, he has them write down all the laws on stone tablets to set up once they enter the Holy Land. And he continues this lecture, going over the blessings and cursings according to the law. Now on to Deuteronomy 28. I found this chapter very interesting, to say the least, as it goes over the many blessings they will have if they obey these laws, and punishments they will have if they disobey them. This chapter is fairly long, and the first thing that stuck out to me is there are way more curses for disobedience than there are blessings for obedience. This could be for several reasons. According to the King James Version Study Bible, this is probably due to human nature. The threat of a severe judgment on the covenant breaker seems to act as a stronger stimulus to correct behavior than any promise of blessing. Another idea, somewhat related, is that Moses saw day to day how unfaithful the majority of the Israelites were and knew their nature, so he was attempting to instill some fear into the ones who could be influenced. Although the law of Deuteronomy has been fulfilled and we are now under Christ's law, many of the same laws and consequences apply to us. One lesson I found in this chapter, put into words the best way I can imagine by Brother Glenn Rose the other day while we were working together, he said, "There is no better way that I would like to live, even in this life, than the one God has laid out for us, not even considering the divine blessings we will receive in the future if we obey God's commandments. We can see almost every sin people commit in this life usually has natural consequences following not long after. I could name these on forever, but for the sake of time, I'll just list a few. Homosexuality causes higher rates of STD transfers, as well as starting up over half of the newly discovered HIVs. Greed makes humans always want more. They're never happy with what they have. They think, oh, well, if I could just have enough to afford that new boat or a new house or a new car, I'd be happy. So they try and get more and more. The few who have all the money they could want and more are the ones who seem the most depressed with nothing more to live or strive for. Now back to the chapter at hand. This chapter starts off with Moses telling the people the blessings that will come to them if they diligently obey the laws that God had set for them. This continues for the first 14 verses. The next 54 verses of this chapter, until the completion, are the exact opposite, showing the many curses that will befall the people if they would not obey the Lord. Throughout these curses, we can see numbers of important prophecies that we can see being fulfilled throughout history. Not to tread on the feet of the next presenter, but the first verse of the next chapter appears as if it's finishing up this one, reading, "These are the words of the covenant which the Lord commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, beside the covenant which he made with them in Horeb." I won't go into any detail, being as it's part of Brother Peter's speech, but I thought it was an interesting point to add. Returning to the start of the chapter, I'll briefly summarize and expound on a couple of interesting points. The blessings cover everything a God-loving person could want and more. The Israelites would be set above the other nations. They would be healthier. All their crops and animals, even their tools and storage houses, would be blessed and flourish. Their enemies would be smitten and scattered. They would be the Lord's people, and all the nations would know it. This, in itself, would not only put Israel above the other nations, but it would also bring glory and knowledge of the one true God to these other nations, which should bring great joy to any God-loving person. They would be rich in goods and be allowed to stay in the land. Also, the Lord would make them the head rather than the tail. If possible, I'd like to hear some comments on what all this statement could possibly entail or relate to. On the surface, it seems simple, but I feel like it could be expounded into something much deeper. Being as we are looking back on this as history, we know that Israel did not obey the Lord's commandments, at least not for long. Hence, the rest of the chapter can all be seen as history, as prophecies revealed through history. Some of them being very specific. They are one of the most important ways we have to prove the Bible true. This punishment, threatened and eventually carried out, is tremendous. The curse follows these general points. Agricultural, local, and international tragedies, including the reverse of all the blessings they would have received, which includes sickness and destruction while occupying the defeat and destruction while occupying the Holy Land. The removal of the 10 tribes into all the kingdoms of the earth, with all its associated evils and consequences, including many foreign sicknesses, physical impairments, and betrayals among themselves. The Babylonish captivity, in which the king of Judah is involved, is spoken of in verse 36, as a nation that they had not heard of. I'll read verse 36. The Lord shall bring thee, and the king, and thy king, which thou shalt set over thee, unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, and there shalt thou serve other gods, wood and stone. At the time Moses spoke of this, Babylon in fact did exist, but it was not yet a nation or a power. Therefore, Israel wouldn't have heard about them or dealt with them before. The Israelites would go into subjection to the Gentiles after the reestablishment from captivity. Their name would become a mockery. Their crops wouldn't be fruitful, and their children would be sold into captivity. Verse 46 states, "And they being the Gentiles, shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever." We know it won't actually be forever, because once Christ returns, his kingdom will conquer the world. In Young's literal translation, it reads, "until the age," which seems more correct to me, and to Dr. Thomas as well, as he states in The Last Days of Judah's Commonwealth on the matter, that their subjection to the Gentiles would continue until the age of the Messiah's administration. Another curse tells of the subjugation to the Greco-Latin horn of the goat, also known as the Roman Empire power. This curse would have started as the Greeks conquered Persia, who were the current world power at that time, and thereby Israel as well. This part of the chapter shows extreme, undeniable detail, starting at verse 49. "The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as an eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand." Not only was this correct, since Greece rose to power and conquered Persia and all the known world unexpectedly and at an incredibly fast rate, but also because the symbol of the Greeks was the eagle of Zeus, and the Romans, who became the world power a short time after the Greeks did, had an eagle on their standards representing their legions. Also, both of these languages spoke a different language than Israel. This curse continues on. Jerusalem would be sieged, stripped of its possessions, and destroyed. They would become desperate. They would become so desperate as to eat their own children. Even the kindest of them would turn evil against their former loved ones. Their population would be reduced drastically, and they would be scattered among all the nations. This cursed prophecy we can see even unto this day. Israel wasn't even a nation until recently, and the Jews are still spread around the world, though they're making their way back now as the age of Messiah approaches, seen by us as another sign of the times. They would be slaves in faraway lands and find no rest among these nations, only distress. I found another point interesting. When it talks about one nation fleeing from another in this chapter, it says they would be spread seven ways, such as in verse 7, "The Lord shall cause thine enemies to rise up against thee and to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way and flee before thee seven ways." Also in verse 25, "The Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go out one way against them, and flee seven ways before them, and shall be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth." Seven in the Bible represents complete. So it could be seen that it would be a complete dispersion of the people, which is what we saw in Israel's case. The biggest lesson we can take out of this chapter, if it isn't obvious enough, can be seen clearly by looking at the reasons given throughout the chapter for why these curses would and did happen to Israel. In verse 15, "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee." In verse 58, "If thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that thou mayest fear the glorious and fearful name of the Lord thy God." And in verse 62, "And ye shall be left few in number, whereas ye were as the stars of heaven for multitude, because thou wouldest not obey the voice of the Lord thy God." Thanks for all your attention, and I'll look forward to y'all's comments.